It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we're at the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative in Des Moines. That is the most recent name for what used to be called the Great Ape Trust. And it's home to five very special bonobos. These bonobos have spent their entire lives as part of a living experiment to study how bonobos think and how and if they can acquire and use human language. The most famous bonobo here is Kanzi. He is 37 years old, and he is known worldwide for his ability to demonstrate real comprehension of spoken language and to communicate by pointing at and combining lexigrams, symbols that stand for words. Kanzi knows hundreds of them. The ACCI is also home to Nyota. He is 20 years old. He loves to wrestle and play games with other bonobos, particularly his six-year-old son, Tico. And he also spends a lot of his time building blanket nests and picking flowers. Alikia is Tico's mother and the only female of the bunch. She became the matriarch of the group in 2014 and apparently works very hard to keep everyone in line. Maisha is a 17-year-old male who occasionally comes into conflict with Nyota, and he is known for being a trickster. Then there's little Tico. Now 6 years old, he is the favorite of all the older bonobos. He loves to chase, climb, spin, play in water, and already has an extensive lexigram vocabulary and apparent understanding of spoken English. Now, if you've been listening to this and wondering, but what is a bonobo? We asked Iowa State University primatologist Jill Preetz to give us an explanation.
The first thing that you might notice is that bonobos look like a very slim chimpanzee. So chimpanzees are a little stockier. Bonobos have very dark faces and they kind of have these red lips. But probably even more striking is that their behavior is different. So bonobos are a species in which females are dominant to males, and that's not what you see in chimpanzees at all. Other things that strike me are that bonobos have a very high voice, and they seem to be much more vocal than chimpanzees. Bonobos, for example, when they have encounters in the wild with other groups, there's not lethal aggression like you might see, especially in East African chimps. You still see displays and things like that in bonobos. But yeah, you have some distinctive behaviors. And I guess in terms of that make love, not war, what ties into that is bonobos have some very interesting sexual behavior that is, in fact, probably without getting into details, more similar to what you might see in humans than in chimpanzees. So sexual behavior is a form of affiliation. It's not just for reproduction in bonobos. It's basically, something you see even between strangers when they come together during these intergroup interactions. It's a way of making peace.
Jill Preetz studies a wild population of chimpanzees in Senegal and is a National Geographic explorer. We asked her to meet us at the ACCI to give us some insight into bonobo behavior, and we will hear more from her later on. We have visited this family of bonobos before. It was about 5 years ago when the organization was still called the Great Ape Trust, and things have changed a lot since then. Back then, the director was the psychologist and primatologist Sue Savage Rumbaugh.
See, he's talking to me now. Do you understand that he's wanting me to come include him in the plan?
She'd been involved with all of the bonobos since their earliest days and brought them to Iowa when Iowa businessman Ted Townsend bankrolled this multi-million-dollar facility. Savage Rumbaugh's connection with the apes was undeniable. Having left the world of academia behind, she was focused more on the experience of living with these remarkable creatures. This is part of an interview we conducted with her in 2012. You'll also hear Kanzi's vocalizations.
It emotionally grabs you. You can't emotionally dismiss how they use language and how they feel about you. They want a relationship with you. They were a little scared initially. They want to touch you. They want to groom you. Kanzi is emphasizing. They want to touch you and groom you. They want to make contact with us. And language has given them a means to do that, and it's given them the desire to do that. It's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And it's rare in the world that two such closely related species are trying so hard to communicate. They want to reach out, to touch each other's soul, to touch each other's heart, to help each other. They people want to do it, and these bonobos want to do it. It's more than science. It's two species reaching across that boundary and feeling like, hey, maybe we can make it. Maybe we bonobos and we humans are closer than we think, and we're not actually alone on the planet, and maybe we can learn from each other how to build a better world.
Shortly after we visited last time, Savage Rumba was placed on leave after accusations of mistreatment of the bonobos. She eventually left, but is still embroiled in a number of legal battles with the ACCI. These days, the facility feels much more like a scientific research center. In 2012, we were able to tour the full facility, interact with bonobos through the bars of their enclosures, and actually touch young Tico. Now, researchers and volunteers never enter the enclosures or prepare the bonobos' food without masks and gloves. That's for the safety of the bonobos, because they're very vulnerable to diseases carried by humans. The space has changed to promote more physical activity and enrichment for the apes. The apes look healthier than they did last time we visited. Kanzi, in particular, used to be morbidly obese. He has now lost 80 pounds since we saw him last, and runs and plays a lot like the younger bonobos do. Research is being conducted again and published, but there are things that have stayed the same. The connection between caretakers and bonobos is still very strong, and the bonobos still use their lexigram symbols to communicate, sometimes about very complex concepts, with the humans around them. When we arrived at the ACCI, the bonobos were outside. They had just finished their breakfast and were enjoying a beautiful April day. Jared Tagliellatella is the director of research at the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative. He commutes from Georgia at least a couple of times a month. And in Georgia, he is associate professor of biology at Kennesaw State University. He took us up on the roof to get a good view of the bonobos. To get there, we climbed up a very unofficial-looking extension ladder.
So, it's safe. This ladder's been here for 3 years. There were two nests, you can see. That's one on the ground over there, which is not very typical, but Inyota was sleeping in that earlier.
So wait, when you say nest on the ground, that looks like a bag.
It's a bunch of blankets, actually.
Okay.
So in the wild, bonobos make a new nest every night to sleep in, and they'll use what's available to them, branches and leaves, and they usually make them pretty high up in the trees. Our guys like to sleep high up, too, in their indoor enclosures, but we provide them with, most of the time, blankets, and they'll weave them together into these pretty elaborate and what looked to be, although I've never tried one, comfy nests. You can see evidence of one as well. This is sort of the day nests, the one they make during the day for little napping periods, are usually not as involved as the night ones. But I think Tico has left his remnants on that tall tower there in that yard. And then there's another one way out there on the ground. So I think that the bonobos were enjoying watching some of the waterfowl that are around the property.
Nice.
So the sway poles are another type of climbing structure that we've put into the yards, and the bonobos love them. Tico can even perch himself because he's kind of smaller up at the top of those narrow poles, and it gives him a great vantage point of the property here. So, and the wildlife sort of serves a bit of an enrichment function for the apes as well, because they get to see different birds landing on the pond. They get to see a decent-sized bunny population that runs just outside of the enclosure. So it provides them with, you know, obviously some degree of stimulation as well. And that's going to be where we spread all the food out for their breakfast. And in the summer months, when it stays lighter later, we even actually do a lot of dinner forage. So they'll really get two meals outside where they're moving around. And I think that that has positively contributed to obviously getting Kanzi's weight way down to where it should be, and also their activity levels going up, because they're getting a lot of stimulation by foraging for food, both physically and mentally. Every year we get like a goose pair that nest on the top of that hill.
Oh,
and
funny.
Tico, finally I think this year they learned their lesson, but Tico would raid the nest and steal eggs. You know, geese can be kind of aggressive.
Right, yeah.
And all the other bonobos are afraid of them. But Tika will, you know, throw a blanket at them, run in there and snatch one and run away. So I always get a kick out of that.
Would he eat the egg?
Not really.
No, just
yeah,
a toy.
Just sort of makes you, it's a bit wasteful on Tika's part. You want to go see Kanzi later, Nyota? You do?
Now, Jared, how long have you been involved here?
So I have been the director of research since the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative was formed in late 2013. But I knew these bonobos because, strangely enough, I was actually in graduate school when they lived at the Language Research Center in Atlanta. And so I've been working with Kanzi since 1998.
The changeover was fairly highly publicized in Iowa, so if people are interested in some of the things that happened, they can do a little research and find out more about it. But I want to talk about what your goals are with these bonobos. We know that there wasn't a great deal of research being done for a while, although there is research, especially with Kanzi, that dates back decades. So there's this incredible body of research with his language ability and his cognition. So in sort of restarting that kind of research, what's your focus? What are you hoping to find out?
We are interested in all the things that make humans human. Things like language, of course, but tool use and problem solving and some sort of higher order cognitive processes. Now, we're also interested in maybe more basic things like foraging behavior, but that's really kind of the basic drive of the research that we have here. So all the things that humans do that make humans so special in the animal kingdom that sort of set us apart, if you will, we're interested in the evolutionary origins. So not only why, but how those things came to be. And by studying our closest relatives, bonobos and chimpanzees, we feel like we can answer those questions.
I am up on the roof of the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative in Des Moines, the facility formerly known as the Great Ape Trust. And I've been talking with Jared Togliella-Tella. He is the director of research at the facility. He's also an associate professor of biology at Kennesaw State University in Georgia. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We are at the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative in Des Moines. It's home to five bonobos, and the focus of the research has been language acquisition and comprehension. I spoke with Director of Research Jared Togliella-Tella up on the roof, where we had a nice view of the bonobos in their outdoor enclosure. And here's Jared continuing our conversation from earlier about the research happening at ACCI.
Currently, we have research projects that are quite varied. We're doing work still with spoken language comprehension, gesture and vocal communication produced by the bonobos, both while they're interacting with people, but also while they're interacting with each other. We do research on some aspects of spatial cognition and foraging. We do research on tool use. We do different things. We've even have a group working with us from a couple universities looking at rhythmicity, so whether the apes actually have a sense of rhythm. Do they have an endogenous rhythm on their own? So a lot of we have all even done some things with prosocial behavior, looking at if they're engaged, let's say, in some sort of social games where they have to work with a partner. Can they cooperate? Do they cooperate? Do they have a sense of fairness? Those kinds of questions.
Tell me about the future, because the future is not here in Des Moines. What are your plans?
Right. We have been, ACCI has been existing for almost 3.5 years now. And as I said, we started with a mission of doing what we could from a research standpoint, but also doing something positive from an animal welfare standpoint. And for us, that meant taking this population of bonobos and making sure they had a species-appropriate diet and making sure that they had lots of enrichment and that the research that we were doing with them and learning about them was having a positive impact on them and not just teaching us things about ourselves. At one of our meetings, most recently, we began thinking about strategic planning. So we felt like we had stabilized the organization. We felt that we were doing fairly well in terms of funding. And our perspective was, okay, what's next? What's the next 5 years going to look like? What's the next 10 years going to look like? And we thought, well, we liked what we were doing. We liked the education mission we had. We liked the research that we were doing. We liked the productivity that we have. But we just thought we could be doing more. And in part of that is increasing the bonobo population size here. So working with AZA and the Species Survival Plan to breed our bonobos with others in captivity to increase population size, which is good for the genetic diversity of the captive population, but it's also good for our research and our education and outreach. And so when we put all those pieces together, one of the things we realized is that we wanted to be able to do more of what we were doing and to be able to do it better. And I'm from Kennesaw State University, which is just north of Atlanta. My co-director, Bill Hopkins, is from Georgia State University, which is in downtown Atlanta. And Kennesaw State University and Georgia State University are contributing significantly to our operational expenses and the research that's being done here. And so we started putting all those pieces together and we thought to ourselves, well, it would be best for our organization and ultimately really the driving force would be best for our bonobos to move to a new location just to, outside of Atlanta. And so that's what we think that's the path forward for us. So we're not going to be changing anything about what we're doing. We're just going to be able to do it all a lot better and provide even more opportunities for research and more opportunities for education.
In engaging in more outreach and trying to educate the public, what do you want them to know about these bonobos? How do you think that changes the people who get an opportunity to Skype with Kanzi?
That's a great question. I mean, this is something that we've talked about a lot. And no matter where we are, whether we're in Des Moines or whether we're in somewhere in Atlanta, you know, you can look around in the environment and you can see things that are particularly exciting. We have bald eagles that fly around the property here. You can probably hear some geese in the background and tree frogs, actually. We've always said that our challenge is to take, let's say, an elementary school student in Des Moines and talk to them about bonobos. But bonobos live halfway across on the other side of the earth. And they're only found in a relatively small part of the Democratic Republic of Congo. So how do I get a kid who lives in Des Moines interested in bonobos? And what's the relevance for that individual? And so we really try to draw the parallel between bonobos, the importance of the forests that they live in, to back to everyone's own backyard. And so what animals do you see? What plants do you see? And really just teaching people the sort of respect for nature. And the other aspect of that is that humans aren't just here by ourselves. We've got animals that are closely related to us, animals that are distantly related to us, and we're all sharing the planet. And I think if we can adopt that perspective or convince kids to adopt that perspective early on in their lives, it's something that carries out throughout their lives, and that could have a positive change on the world.
The program that was designed, that taught Kanzi language, I mean, this was designed in the 1970s, and obviously it's been incredibly effective and illuminating. We've learned a great deal from it. But technology has advanced by leaps and bounds since then. You've mentioned, you know, computer screens and joysticks. What are you most excited about looking into the future, developing with the bonobos to understand their cognition?
Yeah, so I think that one of the things that we've learned from all that great research that Kanzi was a part of and other chimpanzees like Sherman and Austin, which in my mind, it seemed like the original goal was to determine sort of the non-human capacity or potential for human linguistic communication. And what we learned, especially from all of those apes, but Kanzi probably being, you know, perhaps we've learned the most from, which is that they have this amazing ability not only for symbol use on their own, to use these visual symbols to actually stand for words, but on top of that, to actually understand human spoken English. And what intrigues me about that is the idea is that, well, there's a question that lingers. Is that exposure to human language what allowed Kanzi to develop that ability, or is there something that bonobos already come with that allows them to, you know, communicate in a very sophisticated way with one another that we're not appreciating or haven't appreciated scientifically yet? I'm not suggesting for a minute that bonobos have human that have anything that's akin to human language, but I think that they probably have a more sophisticated communication system, and possibly the other great apes as well, than we've really given them credit for up to this point. So I'm excited about the possibility of taking what we've learned from all those studies and looking at how they interact with one another and trying to really figure out both the richness of their communicative signals and the richness of their social lives, because I think there's a lot still to be learned in that domain.
When we came down from the roof, the bonobos came inside to the greenhouse area where we could see them up close. Throughout the greenhouse, there are old fire hoses that have been strung up to give the apes places to climb and swing. Kanzi interacted with Jared and me through the window, slapping his hand against the glass and making what you could describe as a kissy face.
Oh, and we're probably going to come up into the glass and
woo!
Boom.
Hi, Kanzi.
Hi.
Be nice. He wants me to go back there. You want me to chase you with the hose? He said chase using the symbol on the keyboard. But given all the water that's in there, I'm thinking that that's what he's asking. He's saying chase. So that gesture too, that clapping your hands together and then pointing at me is sort of his way of saying chase. So we could check it out. I could go back there real quick. And if you guys want to see it.
We'll watch you chase.
Yeah, we'll see. I could be wrong, so...
But I think if Kanzi says yes, you should do it.
So Jared turned the hose on, and Kanzi in particular was very excited. He's right now rolling around on the floor, getting sprayed with the hose. He's got his mouth open. He also seems to be very aware of the fact that he's being watched, because he will look over at us and sometimes come over and pound on the window. Right now he's bending over, looking backward between his legs.
That's a happy bonobo face right there. The little relaxed, shall we call that the play face. So, and now you're covered in water. Oof.
So does Kanzi request interaction from you more than the other bonobos do?
Definitely. I mean, Kanzi is probably the only... I mean, Tika will do it a little bit, and then Yoda will too. Alika and Maisha really don't use the keyboard to request interactions with us. But Kanzi definitely does it the most, yeah.
Julie?
Okay.
So here's our veterinarian, Julie Burrows. And she's been with us since the beginning of ACCI and actually is much more than a veterinarian because she's here on a very regular basis and oversees our IACUC, which is our Institutional Animal Care and Use Committee, which regulates all the research that we do with the apes here. And she also keeps us in compliance with the USDA and all of that. So she's kind of a full service veterinarian, and the bonobos absolutely love her. So it makes our jobs a lot easier because she gets to do all that stuff with them directly, and we don't have to use the staff necessarily to do that. So
now, I can imagine for a lot of veterinarians, this would be kind of a dream come true. Was this an ambition of yours?
I would say that it was always something that I was interested in. But yeah, there's, you know, with so few bonobos in the world, and especially, you know, a lot of those positions are hard to come by. And so it wasn't anything that I anticipated early on would be part of my day, you know, my day-to-day routine. But I do enjoy the time that I get to spend with them.
What do you think you've really learned from spending time with these bonobos?
Well, I've learned, I think, a lot of different things. First of all, just they're such a unique and special species, and it's been, you know, I've really learned never to underestimate them because they are really, really capable of so many different things and so intelligent. And, you know, even in the capacity that I work with them, there's things that I think we'll never be able to do that. And with a little bit of work and time and patience, you know, we're able to come a long way. And they really are willing and eager to have that human interaction and appreciate that. And that was kind of a surprise to me, I think, was just how, you know, how bonded you can get, you know, just spending time and hanging out. So that was definitely something that I learned from them. And I think we continue to be amazed by them and what they're capable of on a regular basis. And so that's fun to watch and be a part of.
Was there a particular moment early on in your time here that
helped you understand that in a new way, a day where you kind of thought, oh, wait, we are operating on a totally different plane here.
Yeah, well, definitely their capability to use the lexigram. And what, early on, I think when I was first seeing them, one of the lexigrams is stethoscope. And so I was coming in a role as a veterinarian. And I remember one time very early on, after Kanzi had not spent a lot of time with me yet, I walked in and he pointed to stethoscope as a lexigram. It was very clear to me that he knew who I was and why I was here, and that was fun to be a part of. And there's been other moments like that. Sometimes the things, they really are unique at using, you know, they have a small number of symbols really compared to the number of words that you and I have to converse with each other. And so, you know, it's in the hundreds, not the thousands of choices that they have. And just seeing how creative they are with those word choices, I think is really, really neat.
Julie, thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having us.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. We are today at the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative in Des Moines with a group of five bonobos here. And with me now is Nicole Scott. She's research coordinator and facility manager here. And we're going to bring a couple of the bonobos, Nyoto and Tico, into this little demonstration room. What do you do in this room?
So this is where we do most of our cognitive testing with the apes. So most of the cognitive testing is on computer. So we have a touchscreen computer. This is a 24-inch. And so what Tico is doing right now is called match to sample. So he sees a sample. So in that one, it was an ear. It disappears, and then you have two choices that pop up. So he sees the same picture of an ear he just saw, and then he also saw a picture of, I believe it was pineapple. So in order to get it right, he has to touch the picture of the ear again. So this is a common process that we use for lots of different research projects. One that Kanzi is doing right now is an ape identification study, where he'll see a picture of an ape he knew from his past. So Matata, his adoptive mother, or Piske was a male that used to be a part of this group. Both have since passed away. And so we're seeing if he remembers them, if he can match their picture, if he recognizes them. So it's a way to look at if they have memories of the past.
And Tico, when he makes a match, he gets a frozen grape every time he makes a match?
Every time he gets a match, yes. Kanzi is the only one who doesn't necessarily get rewarded with every correct answer because he's so good and he can do so many trials. He would fill up on grapes for the day if we let him.
And Tico keeps looking over here. Why do you think he's doing that? I mean, he's not necessarily paying all of his attention to the screen.
Mm-hmm. Yes, but he's still getting them correct. Yeah. So he has really good memory. A lot of it is there seems to be some intrinsic motivation where they like to please people. So he gets as much motivation for doing the work for getting frozen grapes as he does for making us happy by participating in the task and having an audience to show off for. They like to stare into your eyes, too. Yeah. It's like they get a benefit from that connection. I think as much as we do. At least as much as we do. Yeah.
So with a lot of animals, you're not supposed to gaze into their eyes because it's a challenge. Right. Yep. You don't feel like it is with bonobos?
No. For them, I think it's about that connection. So they do it with us, people they see every day. They do it, like Inyota's doing that with you right now. So people that they've just met. It might be part of a way to assess us to see if we're trustworthy, if they like us or not. They do tend to hold grudges. They like women more than they like men. So especially Inyota is the ladies' bonobo, if you will. And if men come in for a tour, especially tall men, he has a tendency of jumping at them at the window trying to scare them. So I think it's interesting that even though we're a different species, they clearly have those sort of prejudices and can categorize us as people that they want to gaze into their eyes or not. So we're also doing a maze task with Tico right now. So we trained him on how to use a joystick. Uh-huh. And so he just had to move the cursor to the top of the screen, the bottom, to the left or the right. And then we gave him this 3D virtual hallway that he had to move down, but he had some problems mapping the movements of the joystick to what he was seeing, and he kept running into the wall because that was the point of the training, was to run into the wall. So we're working on getting a new task ready for him where he can chase this virtual ball. And then maybe that will get him to the next step of figuring out what is expected of him for these mazes. And that is research from a professor out at University of Michigan. So Kanzi's already completed the task, and Tico is the next one to get up to that point. And then Alikia and Inyota and Maisha are on the verge of getting to the point where they can move on. But they're not as good of students as Tico and Kanzi, so they're kind of waffling between being ready and giving up.
Nicole Scott is research coordinator and facility management here at the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative. We're at the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative in Des Moines, formerly known as the Great Ape Trust. It is home to a family of 5 bonobos. We will be back for more in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we are at the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative in Des Moines. This is a facility that used to be called the Great Ape Trust. It is home to 5 bonobos now, and these bonobos are being studied to try to understand how their brains work, studying their behaviors. And with me right now is Jill Preetz. She is an anthropologist at Iowa State University, a National Geographic Explorer. She's director of the Fongoli Savanna Chimpanzee Project in Senegal. We've talked to her many times about the chimpanzees that she studies in Senegal, studying them in the wild. And she met us here today. Hello, Jill.
Hi, Charity. It's great to talk with you.
So when you observe the bonobos in captivity, and I know you've also interacted with chimpanzees in captivity, and then you go back to the wild and you watch the behaviors of the chimpanzees that you observe in Senegal. Have you learned something from these captive interactions that gives you insight into what you see in the wild?
I mean, I always say, my advice is that if you have the opportunity to work or study or somehow interact with captive apes before you do wild studies, I think that is almost vital, because it gives you insight in a situation that that helps you decipher things in the wild that are oftentimes, for one thing, you're a little farther removed, and you're trying not to actually interact with the apes, but it gives you so much insight. So my training was with captive chimpanzees, and just learning how to be around them and how to interpret their behavior was key. And even though I do see differences in wild chimps, partly because different communities of chimps have different traditions and that sort of thing, but it really is more complex, I think, than people can appreciate as well, just from seeing animals in the zoo. There's a lot going on. And I still say that, you know, I've been studying the Fongoli chimps for 16 years now, but I still have so much to learn in terms of their communication especially. And so a lot of times we can understand the way they communicate, but there's so many nuances, I think, that we don't yet understand. And that's where captive animals really are key.
Well, I want to bring one of your students into the conversation now. Andrea Rabinowitz is a PhD student at Iowa State University in Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, working with you. And Andrea, hello.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Tell me about the research that you're doing here.
In 2016, completed my master's, also with Jill in the anthropology department, and I did my research here with the bonobos at ACCI, and my project focused on getting an updated vocabulary for Kanzi, essentially, that he hadn't been formally tested or really worked with in terms of his language comprehension in several years since last published study. So I worked with him on a touchscreen matching task to see which words he understands in English and both the lexicogram symbols.
Now, for people who aren't familiar with Kanzi and his abilities, take us back in time, because Kanzi is a bonobo that researchers have been working with for decades to develop a vocabulary of symbols, right? So tell us a little bit about how you can communicate with Kanzi and how he uses these symbols.
Oh, like you said, this entire research project started decades ago in the 70s, where researchers created these abstract symbols they called lexigrams to represent different words, and tried to teach and interact with apes, chimpanzees, and bonobos at the time to see what symbols they could learn and if they could use them and understand a simple grammar using these lexigrams. And Kanzi, when he was very young, just sort of learned spontaneously by working around researchers and other apes in the environment with the lexigrams, and has been, as you said, also a big focus for a lot of this research for many years. And he still will use the lexigrams on his own. We have boards of the lexigrams posted in his enclosures, so he can come up and, you know, point to different items that he's requesting or to communicate with care staff or researchers. And the humans, care staff researchers, we will also point to the lexigram, sometimes talking with him, and also talk to him in spoken English, which he understands that we sort of take it for granted now. But it's really amazing how much he can just understand while we're talking to each other or to him or other apes.
So how do you know he understands the words you're saying in English when you're just communicating with someone else?
I mean, this is all very anecdotal, but it's similar to how we talk to people. If we ask him to help us clean up at the end of the day, ask us to bring some garbage or something that's in one of the enclosures, or if one of the doors is stuck on a blanket that they had in the enclosures, ask him to bring the blanket in and he'll do that. If he hears us talking about a certain food item or sees a food on the table, whether or not it's for him, sometimes he'll go and point to it on the lexigram board too.
So in doing your research for your master's and updating our understanding of Kanzi's grasp of this kind of language, of these lexigrams, and also understanding the English language, what did you find?
Well, found that he still understands a lot, that he's still very, very smart. I only did test a subset of the words that are in the lexigram. So there's over 300 symbols created, and I only tested 120 simple words for this beginning project, and he, you know, scored above chance on almost all of them. A lot of words that I would expect him to know, a lot of preferred food items, peanut, banana were his top two that are delicious, and he gets to eat them a lot also. He also had a good understanding of a lot of the other bonobos that he works with, including his mom, Matata, who passed away several years ago. So it, again, makes sense that he would understand a lot of the words or of items and other apes, individuals that are important to him that he interacts with a lot. And again, moving forward, it's important to know words that he definitely understands, or that we can say with, you know, some confidence that are in his vocabulary, if we want to test him or see what he understands in grammar or word order, see what words he can, how he communicates with us as well.
Now, as we mentioned, this the research with Kanzi started in the 1970s, and that was a time when a lot of different language programs with great apes were underway. There was the Washo Project in New Mexico. There was the Coco, the gorilla project that was started about the same time. Jill, from your perspective, you know, now that our understanding of great apes has evolved and our understanding of scientific research has also evolved, what do you see as the future of this kind of research? And the language was where we started, but where do we go from here?
I mean, I say this all the time in my classes. I feel like there's still a lot we don't know about great ape communication. And, you know, historically it's been painted as quite simple and emotional, which, you know, is the case in some context. But I think there's a whole lot. And again, you know, when I'm out with the chimps, I can interpret a lot and I can predict things. What sticks in my mind is when I can't, and you know, the gaps in our knowledge. And so just based on what Andrea found, you know, some of the learning process, for example, with Kanzi, and he had this, it seemed like, you know, the context in which he learned was critical. That was one of the big outcomes of the Kanzi project, was that, you know, volunteering, learning, in a different way than apes had been taught before. Partly for me too, it's this, you know, age-related changes, I guess, are something that strike me as interesting now that I get older. But so part of Andrea's project was also to look at Tico, who's quite young, and some of the, you know, the teenagers, Nyota, for example. And so to look at how great apes learn relative to humans. So, you know, is there a critical learning period in great apes? That sort of, and I know others have looked at those, but I think that there are still a lot that we don't know. And, you know, these bonobos that are trained or understand lexigrams, I think, are key, because there really aren't many other apes like that. And to be able to interact with an animal that's so closely related to us that you can identify with them and on so many different levels, that I just don't see with any other animal species that I've worked with. And I've worked with other primates, including monkeys. And of course I have dogs. But that to me is such a unique experience. And so it's just, yeah, I mean, it's amazing to be able to ask Kanzi something in English and to have him to point out what I'm asking for using a lexigram board. And so that sort of experience is something that's unique and that is, yeah, really thrilling to me.
How about you, Andrea? What has been most striking personally for you from your experiences with these bonobos?
I think similar to Jill. I mean, the first time I started volunteering here a little bit before I started actually doing my research to get to know the apes and for them to get to know me as well and be comfortable working with me in data collection. But the first time that Kanzi held up one of the paper lexigram boards and pointed to one, I didn't have a good view at the time, so I couldn't see what he was asking for. But just the idea that Kanzi was talking to me with the lexigrams, as also someone who grew up learning about Kanzi and always wanted to work with apes, it was a pretty amazing moment, a great experience. And yeah, just every day it's fun to see them and have to sort of pinch myself and remember that I'm just hanging out with Kanzi. And all of the bonobos understand some English. A lot of captive primates sort of form certain relationships with their caregivers too. But just having the opportunity to work with them, such smart animals, so closely related to us, is pretty amazing.
I think because these projects have been going on for so long that a lot of people are comfortable with the idea that chimpanzees or bonobos or gorillas can acquire some kind of language similar to humans. Something a lot of people feel that sets us apart from other creatures is the ability to plan ahead and sort of an understanding of time, future, past, etc. Do you see, in your communication with Kanzi, do you see evidence that he's planning for the future? Or, you know, how much insight into his thinking can you get?
That is a hard thing to definitively test. I know he'll understand something like if we tell him, oh, tomorrow we'll be doing this activity or you'll be getting this food for breakfast, that he'll understand that concept. But I don't know. Like I said, hard to definitively test experimentally. I wouldn't be very surprised if some of those lines between our cognitive abilities are a little bit fuzzier than people originally thought.
No, I guess I was just going to say, I really agree with what Andrea just said about this fuzzy line. I think that most of the things that we've studied or, you know, used to try to identify ourselves as unique, you know, those barriers have kind of fallen to the wayside. And so, you know, the line becomes fuzzy. And in terms of, you know, planning, I mean, one thing that I can easily see when I look at wild chimpanzees is how they are able to predict and use their habitat seasonally. And so, and, you know, we have the same ideas now that we spend so much time with them. Oh, it's this time of year that baobab season is going to fruit. And so they'll head over there, you know, it's 3 kilometers away. and basically they can predict. And so there's some, you know, obviously there's a lot of knowledge of their habitat and time, but in terms of if it's similar to the way that we plan, and the way I plan is very different from the way people who are more organized plan, but then, you know, the days of the week and the month and that sort of thing. So there's definitely some similarities, but it's the way that we measure it, I think.
As researchers, I understand that there are very specific things that you want to take away from your experiences with the bonobos. But what would you want the general public to understand about what we can experience here and what we've been able to learn from this group of bonobos?
I mean, I think for me, the thing that is always struck me about this type of situation, and I think I said, right, you know, when I learned that these bonobos are coming to Iowa, that I was thrilled, because if it gives people the ability to see how similar these animals are to humans, to me, that's the biggest take-home message, because most people are not. I consider myself very lucky. And when I first got to volunteer with captive chimpanzees, I fell in love, and that was it. That just ruined me for any other, you know, research I wanted to do. But that sort of experience is, very few people have it. And even in a zoo, you can go and look at apes. You get a very different view from the type of situation that you have here, in which the apes actually come up, you know, and want to interact with people, and you're coming into their home, so to speak. It's just a very different situation. And so I know that a lot of people in Iowa and elsewhere have been able to come here and get some insight into these animals that are so closely related to us. And I think, to me, that is like one of the most special experiences that a person could have.
Anything you want to add?
I also feel very lucky having this experience, and especially with bonobos, a lesser known, very endangered species. A lot of people don't have the opportunity to see them ever in their lives at zoos, or even hear about bonobos or know what they are. So it's great for education and also for a personal experience, and having some sort of interaction and connection with an animal that you probably would never really see or get to know otherwise.
Well, Andrea Rabinowitz, thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you.
Andrea Rabinowitz is a PhD student at Iowa State University working with the bonobos here. She's in the Ecology and Evolutionary Biology program there. And Jill Preetz, thank you so much.
Well, thanks again. I always enjoy talking to you.
Jill Preetz is an anthropologist at Iowa State University. She's a National Geographic Explorer and director of the Fongoli Chimpanzee Project in Senegal, and of course a frequent guest on Talk of Iowa. We spent the hour listening back to our visit to the Ape Cognition and Conservation Initiative in Des Moines. This is the organization that used to be called the Great Ape Trust. Right now, it's home to 5 bonobos, and the focus of the research is language acquisition, comprehension, and cognition in these great apes. We took many pictures on our tour of the facility, and you can see some of those pictures and some videos on our Facebook page at Iowa Public Radio, on our website, iowapublicradio.org, and also on our Twitter feed at IPR Talk. Talk of Iowa is produced by Iowa Public Radio. This episode was produced by Emily Woodbury. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.